Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Rita Dwyer, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 1-888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Fran, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. You know, I know you showed me just before we went on the air, I know you usually close the show, you know, with a prayer for the waters, you know.
In the Gulf of Mexico, and right. We're coming up to that one-year anniversary of the big BP spill. And I think it's interesting just to mention while we're on that topic, or while I've brought us on to that topic, that BP has finally issued their report of the tragedy, and they are claiming that less oil leaked out from that oil rig in 2010 than did in the previous year, 2009. So we've got a few problems with BP.
Well, the point was there was an email that was circulating around the globe today that there was a similar prayer. He wrote the prayer that you read for
right.
the Gulf.
Right, Masaru Emoto, yeah. And he also wrote one now for the people in Japan and their water, because now their water has been determined to be undrinkable. And he asked that everybody at 12 o'clock noon today, in whatever time zone you're in, say this particular prayer three times, putting your hands together in a prayer position and putting your whole sense of sincere prayer into this. But I feel that if anybody wants to jot this down and say it at any time during the day, it can only help heal the waters in Japan. The water of Fukushima nuclear plant, we are sorry to make you suffer. Please forgive us. We thank you and we love you. And that you are to say out loud with your heart and in your mind and repeat it three times.
Okay. You know, on another note, I constantly, as you do, you know, scan the newspapers, you know, for different things. And I don't remember ever writing into a newspaper, but I did this past weekend. There's a major newspaper in New York that has an article every week. It's a piece by an esteemed rabbi, you know, where people write in questions and he answers them.
Let's elaborate on it, because it's not like you're just writing to a rabbi. There was a group called the God Squad that was established maybe 20, 25 years ago, and the two of them, Rabbi Gelman and Father Tom, together answered questions and tried to their best to bring the two differing religions together into one community. And they became very popular on Long Island and in New York City as like the go-to for all the religious answers. And so Father Tom, unfortunately, is ill, and he's broken away from the God Squad. And Rabbi Gelman continues to write the article answering for the three most common religions in Newsday.
Yeah, well, the name of this particular article was Faith, Not Science, Paves a Path to Life After Death. And the question that was written in was from somebody who had a very striking and significant near-death experience. And he mentions that he'd always been a person that that demanded, you know, evidence, and he wasn't particularly, you know, religious. But after having this near-death experience, he even describes it before he could say anything. He said that he sensed or felt or heard a voice he truly believed was the voice of God telling him that it wasn't his time. And eventually he was, you know, resuscitated and lived. And his question was, you know, to the rabbi, do you believe in the existence of such experiences? And the article, the answer goes on that, well, first he gives a history of near-death experiences, but the basic tone of the faith of the article is that is really downplaying the experience. He's saying that the belief that death is not an end is an article of faith, not a conclusion from a neurological experiment. And he even went on to say things like, you know, if I believe in heaven, I do it, you know, because of my faith and not because, you know, some doctor is wearing a Mickey Mouse tie, and the patient talks about that. But then he says that, you know, you come to a belief in heaven because God promised us eternal life if we obey, you know, the Torah or the Quran or, you know, any of the text. And, you know, to me, you know, this was an example of how religion constantly downplays personal experience, and in turn, you know, it's sort of like mastering the flock. The only way to get there is through strict adherence to the particular religious beliefs. And to me, you know, what I wrote to him was, you know, really makes no sense. I mean, as a man of the clergy, I thought that, what do you care of how somebody gets to a belief in God, you know, in heaven? You know, if it's personal experience, I mean, you should be congratulating them and not downplaying it. There's more than one route.
Right, but I think you hit the nail on the head. The whole evolution of organized religion has brought us to a place where it's just a control item. It has very little to do with spirituality itself. It's, this is my religion, this is my flock, these are my people, don't go to another church or another temple or another anything, you're mine, and this is how I'm going to keep you mine. Oh, and by the way, pay into the little dish that we pass around or the building fund or everything, and religion's become a business, and it's just another part of controlling the people. Now, not to say that religion is bad. Religion has some very wonderful qualities to it, and a lot of people find peace in this quote-unquote blind faith of believing things. But just because somebody has blind faith, isn't it horrible to say, oh, we've got science that proves it? Oh, don't even look at the science.
My argument there is, you know, I mean, the suicide bombers have wonderful blind faith, you know.
Right, right.
So,
and who's leading that flock? And that's the point. It depends what flock you've decided to follow blindly.
Right. Well, we're going to follow the flock of a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to have a wonderful guest who's an expert on dreams and what they mean and the connection to the spiritual, you know, Rita Dwyer. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back. We have an announcement. The Academy of Spirituality and Paranormal Studies will be holding their annual conference, Spirituality, Science, and the Paranormal, from June 2nd through June 5th, 2011, on the campus of Kutztown University in Pennsylvania. The conference will feature inspiring presentations from some of the leaders in the field of spirituality and non-physical reality, and provide attendees with new insights on a variety of spiritual and paranormal topics. Conference details can be found by visiting their informative website, www.aspsi.org, or by calling 860-242-4593. That's 860-242-4593.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Rita Dwyer. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org.
Rita Dwyer is a former research chemist with patents and papers in the aerospace field. A colleague's dream led to his saving her life, and this aroused her interest in the study of dreams. She subsequently became a founding member of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and they could be found on iasdreams.org. Rita is also a writer and a lecturer and runs workshops in the field of dreams. I didn't realize that. Rita is interested in all aspects of dreaming, but especially psi dreams, healing dreams, and spiritual dreams. Welcome, Rita.
Thank you, Bob and Fran.
You know, so glad that you can join us again. You know, I mentioned just a minute ago that that significant experience where a colleague saved your life, and some people may have heard about that from one of your prior appearances, but I think many have not. So if you could just relate that extraordinary circumstance to us again, we appreciate it.
Okay, in brief, in the mid-1950s, I was working for a premier liquid rocket engine company during the time of the space race with the Russians to get into outer space and on the moon and all that stuff. And we kept doing more and more powerful kinds of propellants to help us get there, but they were also very dangerous. And one of them exploded, and I was caught with this a huge glass ensemble, blew up in my face, and I was covered with the materials and literally burning to death when a friend rescued me. And I only found out later that he had dreamt of it exactly as it happened several times before, had never told me. They were horrible nightmares. But when the actual event happened in physical reality, he did what he had done in his dreams, and he saved my life, and he's been my friend ever since until he just made his passage this past year.
Mm. And before that, I guess you never really gave much thought to the subject of dreams. I mean, you were pretty much a material scientist slash researcher kind of a person. And, I mean, do you consider yourself, you know, spiritual in nature, or is it was this an awakening that happened after your close brush with death?
Well, I consider myself spiritual. We're all spiritual, but I think that I was perhaps more inclined to be religious and following the religion in which I was raised, which is Roman Catholicism, in which I still practice. But it certainly developed my spiritual being and the understanding that there's much more to life than just everyday things. And so hard science doesn't have all the answers. And now I have a foot in both camps. I love hard science. I love the idea of outer space, but I'm also one foot in inner space and exploring what goes on with my own mind and brain and spirit and other people's as connected to me.
Mm. So, you know, this here's an example that in your personal life where, you know, precognitive dreams can not only help us prepare for the future, but sometimes, you know, they can help save lives. So the question that a lot of people always have when it comes to precognition is, can we change the outcome, you know, through our free will? You know, is the dream showing us one possible outcome of many, or how do you look upon these things?
Well, I can't give you an exact answer to that, but I believe that when I have a dream that seems to be precognitive, and the more that we watch our dreams, the more we get a sort of handle on what they're about. You know, are they really just our fears, and we have to allay the fears? Are they something that's really telling us something that's coming our way? And we can change things. It's like anything else. If you tell me not to take Flight 91 because you heard that the engine isn't working properly when I get to the airport, I say, I'm not going on that thing. And our dreams are like that. We have the choice, yet we could take it and take the risk. But we also can use our own free will to decide.
I think it's fair to say, you know, we live in a society where many people tend to discount dreams. I mean, you constantly hear things, well, it was only a dream. You know, do you think that we should be taking our dreams more seriously?
Oh, definitely. That's one of the things I've been doing for the past few decades. I certainly took mine seriously after what happened to me.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
And I've found times within my own family where my dreams helped me protect them from things by taking, you know, actions that avoided those possible outcomes. Yes, we do have choices, and I think that we're warned many times. A really good example of this, Bob and Fran, is dreams that warn of health issues, prodromal dreams, because we have, our body knows, our brain knows from signals within our body when we're having some physical problems, and they're often reflected in our dreams long before the physical symptoms display themselves. Mm. Now, that's a part of our physiology, I suppose. Another thing about dreaming of people in the afterlife is we often have those we love who come and warn us not only of what might be going on that could be detrimental to us, but sometimes bringing cures and remedies.
Yeah, and I think I may have even told you, you know, off the air about something that happened to me that was kind of extraordinary, where I had a dream where my deceased father-in-law came to me, who I had no contact, you know, since he passed, 18 years ago. And, you know, in the dream, he gave me a very specific health ailment that that needed to be taken care of, you know, and I subsequently, you know, went to the doctor and had it taken care of. But that's exactly what you're talking about, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You see, that's the one thing that I just, as I was sitting here, you know, getting ready to speak with you, going through some old papers and things that I'd saved, and one of the things was telling about, you know, our greatest fear is the fear of death, but my own belief is the greatest power is the power of love. And although our physical bodies may pass along, our spirits are still present somewhere else, somehow, in the afterlife. And they still care and love us, those people who are spirits or people who are there who loved us before. And I think that they're always looking out for us and wanting us to be comforted and taken care of. You know, if all of our own, what shall I say, little things that happen during life are somehow attended to and smoothed down. There are things we have to go through sometimes, and dreams help us to realize after a person has passed that we need to do a little bit of thinking about reparation or, you know, making peace again if we've not been on a very good kind of place with those that we love.
Mm. And I know, you know, talking about dreams that involve spirit, you know, those that are deceased, I know you wrote a wonderful article for our newsletter at Signs of Life, and what you talked about the difference between an of dream and a with dream. So can you get into that a little bit?
Sure. My friend and colleague, Dr. Ed Kellogg, who's out in Oregon, is a biochemist, and he's very interested in aging and things medical. But he's also very interested in dreams and in psi dreams, those that predict the future or that we can use to help our ways and or help ourselves in ways that modern society doesn't really appreciate yet. But he's the one who pointed that out to me, that we often dream of people after they've passed, and lots of times it does have to do with things like our own fears, our sorrow, our loneliness, our guilt because we think we haven't done enough. Those are all psychological issues that surely our dreams show us and that we can work through with proper attention. But there are dreams that come that are really dreams that feel as if we're really, really with these people. And they make their presence known through a variety of ways. Dreams are one of them, but there's also the idea that science tells us that energy never dies. You know, it only changes form. And so if someone has left a physical body and is now in spirit, they still seem able to manipulate certain aspects of, let's say, energy, and it can be electromagnetism or who knows what the whole thing is all about. But they are able to do things like, one of the things I found fascinating as I researched this subject is how many people feel the presence of someone coming into their room, their bedroom, feeling their form pressing down the mattress or pulling up the covers or tucking in. And these are all like manifestations of the magnetic or the energy that can be used by someone in spirit, including things like telephone calls or turning the lights on and off or things of that sort. I have lots of examples of that.
Yeah. So I know a lot of people tend to, you know, be skeptical of psychokinesis. You know, they attribute, acknowledge that it exists, but they attribute it to only the living mind. But they don't consider that psychokinesis could be from a deceased entity as well. And I think that's what happens with these different things that you talk about, like lights going on and off and objects moving. But when you talk about these with dreams, I guess, so when people talk about having a dream visit, that's a with dream, you know, a visit from a deceased loved one that's in there. With the way that to listen to people describe it, it's very, very distinct from the of dreams.
Could I read something to you after putting that article in Signs of Life? I did get some responses, and one Gwen Mahler wrote in. I'll just do something very briefly here.
Yeah.
My husband passed away 4 years ago. He was an airline pilot, and I was a flight attendant, and consequently so many of my dreams are based on that life. I, for about 2 years, recorded every single dream of/with him, and then on and off continued to do so. I have a huge album of all these dreams. One dream, actually two in particular, was absolutely, in my mind, a visitation. Fred had passed away about 2 days prior, and I was asleep, and I felt the aura of the room change. It was almost like when he came home very late at night from flight, how I could tell that he had quietly entered the dark room. I felt the bed on either side of me compress. It was as though someone was leaning over me. Then a voice belonging to Fred said, "Honey, I'm back." I saw him in a soft flannel shirt with colored dots all over it, nothing like he would have ever worn. I bolted up in bed and said, "Honey, I missed you so much." I jumped out of bed and stood next to him. He said, "Honey, don't tell me what you don't have. Tell me about what you do have." I think he meant the children. I reached out to hug him, and he pulled away. I awakened to standing there alone.
Wow, now that encompasses just about everything.
Wow. Isn't that beautiful?
That's a wonderful.
Fabulous.
And when you talk about different types of dreams, I mean, one category might be a spiritual dream, another would be a healing dream. It seems to me that this type of dream would be both.
Yes, and one of the mistakes people make with doing dream work or watching their dreams or trying to pay attention or make meaning from them is that they are too quick to grab an answer. And when we're too quick to do that and we don't look at every aspect of our being, we're apt to miss things. So the obvious thing, maybe something we already know, but Jeremy Taylor, one of our dream work greats, says the things that dreams come to tell us, yes, we do know some of them, but they also always come to tell us something we don't know. Mm. So it's good to look at them at every level. Is it physical? Is it about my body? Is it mental or emotional, about my mind state or my energy? Is it spiritual? Because we're all of those things, and all of them are reflected in our dreams, and oftentimes the dream is multi-leveled, and we just don't dig far enough.
So people, I guess you would agree that people make a mistake, you know, if they have a dream and, you know, and they pick up some sort of a dream guide and they look it up and it says one specific thing and they say, okay, that's what it is, and they don't reflect upon other meaning.
Yes, and there are some dream guides, I think you would say, might be helpful in offering options, you know, ideas. But no one but the dreamer knows what the dream means for him or her, because nobody knows what our own experiences have been in life. We can project our own ideas on someone else's dream, and no matter how skilled we are at dream work, we can only ask questions as they might be what we would think, but it's not necessarily what the dreamer has in mind or has come for the dreamer to address.
Yeah, and we're going to be honored that you're going to be joining us at our grief retreat workshop over the weekend of May 20th.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
And one of the things that people will be very anxious to hear, because it comes up so often, and you wrote about a little bit about that in the article, is ways that people can you know, foster the right conditions, you know, to have a, you know, a with dream. I mean, there are some things that we can do.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, there are, and yet we can't always, you know, be 100% sure we're going to get them, because it depends on what that person that we're trying to contact in the afterlife is doing, him or herself. And there's something else about that. I don't think we just go there and play harps.
Yeah.
You know, it's the kind of thing where if you were married to a very busy person who was always out doing very important things, it may be that you might catch him doing something like that again. And he'd say, later, okay?
Yeah.
In fact, Ed Kellogg, the guy I was talking about recently, is a believer in, and a, not just a believer, but he's a skilled lucid dreamer, which is one way to visit those who have passed on, by willfully doing so. And he's done that in bringing back information that he would not have known. So it's quite evidential, and it's excellent early stuff research that he's done, and something we should all be looking at. But one of the people that he contacted was definitely not interested in his being there. suggested he go away.
Uh-huh.
He was busy.
Right.
But yeah. Ed now has, we have with the Association for the Study of Dreams an annual conference, you know, somewhere around the world. But we also have what's called the Cyber Dreaming Conference, where we test our dreaming minds on things like precognition and telepathy and shared dreaming and things of that sort. And he's now proposing to work out a protocol for dreaming with those who have passed on. But we are going to be the volunteers. So, for example, we'll list ourselves as Houdini did, in a way, with something that anyone who dreams of us after we've passed will find as evidential information they can bring back to be corroborated by those who were left behind.
Oh, that's interesting. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, it is. And it's great.
Yeah. So, well, you're going to have to wait for the results, right?
Well, you know, it's funny because he said he'd be first on the list, and I said, at my age, I'm glad to do it. And Bob Vandecastle was in his 80s, said, hey, he's a better subject.
Yeah. Well, you know, and one of the things that when you wrote about some of the beginner's methods, I had to pay attention because one of the first things that you said, that there are people, and my son is one of those people. If you ask my son about his dreams, he'll tell you quite frankly that he never ever dreams. And it's one of the first things that you wrote. You know, when people say they never dream, that's not true.
Oh, exactly. We all dream every night. And we dream not just in the dreams that are the REM period, which is with rapid eye movement, where we get the big story dreams. But even between those dreams, we will still have mentation, we'll have images, we'll have ideas that come forth if you're awakened and people ask you what you've dreamt. But the idea is to develop the habit of dreaming so that if you do that, you're far more likely to catch dreams of and with the persons who've gone on who wish to be in touch with you. It's a matter of habit. And everyone does. It's just that we don't recall. Your son is not making a habit of recalling his dreams, perhaps because they're difficult for him to remember.
Well, and as you know better than anyone, I mean, that there are so many artistic people, you know, artists, scientists, writers, you know, they all talk about when they're interviewed and how'd you come up with that idea, you know, and they'll talk about they came to them in a dream. So, I mean, would you say that, you know, our dreams, do you think of it as tapping into a collective consciousness, like Jung would talk about, or I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to come from spirit, but it could just come from this collective body of knowledge.
It can do that, very likely so. It can also come from our own inner creator, that we, in what our attention is drawn to, whether we wish to be creative and are looking for new ideas, while we're sleeping, our brains are still working, and we're not conscious of that. But, you know, it's like anything else. A lot of writers write from their dreams, and their plots come to them at night. There's a book called Writer's Dreaming that a woman collected the dreams of writers a long time ago, and amazing things have come from that. But the creations that come to us are partly, I think, inspiration, and that has to do with spirit and spiritual things. It has to do with connecting with the collective unconscious, where there's a source of all knowledge and everything anybody has ever sought or known or created. So it's such a mystery.
Yeah.
It boggles my mind, and I'm thrilled to be looking into it, but I'll never know it all. But I know that if we pay attention to our dreams and look into ourselves and our spirit and what do we want, you know, the idea of going to bed and having an affirmation of what it is you want is a helpful thing. But thought has form.
Yeah. And you talk about there are certain, you know, themes that, as a collector of dreams over the years, I'm sure you see many patterns and a lot of common themes. But, you know, so if somebody has a dream, you know, for instance, where they're flying, or when they're out in public with no clothes on, these dreams are a way of us working out our problems, would you say?
Oh, yeah. They're archetypal because they're all problems that are common to many of us. And so, you know, they may have multiple meanings. I mean, being naked can be kind of exposing oneself in public personally, you know, like I'm sharing a new idea and I'm afraid that what I'm doing is going to be laughed at. So that it could be that kind of exposure in which you're feeling you're burying yourself and your mind and your thoughts. But the other kind is people may just get a great kick out of flaunting what they have.
I'm glad you're open to that possibility.
Yeah. And flying is the same way. Flying can be a marvelous, marvelous dream, feeling as if, you know, you're way above looking down on things. But that could also be an ego trip where you feel like you're above everybody else and you have to look down on them. But
right.
It also can be something that signals the onset of lucid dreaming.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we will be continuing this fascinating discussion with Rita Dwyer. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tonight's guest is Rita Dwyer. And this show is sponsored by the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.wimbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. With these hard economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have the extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items, and when you find the ones that you wish to purchase, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. We have our Holiday of the Earth Raffle 2011 coming up in just 22 days. The drawing will be on Earth Day, April 22nd. You will win 1, 2, 3, 4, or maybe even 5, depending on how many chances you purchase, medium readings with either Bobby Allison, Laura Lynn Jackson, Lynn LeClaire, Dave Campbell, Kat, or Kathy Towell, all certified mediums. It's $5 a chance. You are unable to buy those chances online, but if you go to the website, there are instructions for sending in your check to purchase your raffle tickets. And you can send them, if you don't want to go there, you could send your raffle request to Forever Family Foundation, 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572. And just because Bob mentioned it before, I'm going to remind everybody again, the weekend retreat, May 20th to 22nd, 2011, at the Guesthouse Retreat and Conference Center in Chester, Connecticut, is coming up. It's filling up, so if you want to get in there, you could go on the website there. You can make your reservations. It's Transforming Grief into Hope and Understanding. It's an afterlife exploration retreat. It will feature, as one of our facilitators, our guest tonight, Rita Dwyer, also Dr. Mo Teresa Hanna, Doreen Malloy, and Kim Russo for a weekend filled with dreams, dream visits, induced after-death communication, psychic empowerment, medium spirit communication, and grief recovery, amongst lots of other stuff.
Well, thank you for all that, and I thank Rita for hanging in there. And I know we weren't able to take any calls before, but
we do have a caller holding. We have Catherine from Albany.
Catherine?
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Thank you for taking my call.
You're on with Rita Dwyer. Did you have a question or a comment?
I may be, this is a field that I have a lot of firsthand knowledge. I may be mistaken, though. I was calling for a reading. I got taken to call, and I may be mistaken about that. Maybe that's not what she does. I'm a person whose life changed drastically with the death of a loved one, and I have a lot of wealth of experience, but does she do reading type thing, or am I mistaken about that?
Rita is a dream researcher. She doesn't do readings, but we have a separate show for that, you know, meeting.
Right, but Catherine, have you had any dream visits from your loved one who has crossed over?
Not recently. I was let's see. No, I never had a lot of dreams. I was one who devoted myself to care and took care of someone, helped them die, and it changed my life. I feel akin to what you're doing, but no, I haven't had a lot of dreams from that person.
I would encourage you then to call in on
Third
Thursday of every month, the mediums and messages, and there's a guest medium every show.
Okay. And in the meantime, I'll research your guests more on the Internet, so I'm sorry about that.
Okay, it's okay. Thank
All right,
you.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Rita, I know you have a lot of different experiences that people write into you about or tell you about, and Is there something in particular I know that you wanted to mention about an acquaintance that you know that where the deceased loved one made some things appear?
Well, yes, and it's of interest since we're talking about how to begin to receive messages from dreams or from just being open is really what it's about. I think that if we're open to hearing from those on the other side, it makes it easier for them to come to us. And if we have the attitude, well, it's only a dream, we don't really believe in that. And so our belief system plays a big part of the attraction of the energy that draws or opens the door between the worlds or lifts the veil, whatever we want to call it. But I think that believing that it can happen and knowing it happens to other people and hearing about it is helpful. And one of the people that I know from our church, well, a couple, were a vibrant, active couple in their late 70s probably, very much in love, very still wonderful, you know, together, working with other people, doing good things. And one morning, the woman, Marge, left home with her son to do an errand, and the husband was leaving later to do another, and he apparently had a massive heart attack and hopped a curb and slammed into a house. And the owner was there and ran out with the cell phone, but couldn't get the car open because it's one of those that locks. And so too much damage was done between the time that emergency people came and took him away, so that he was on life support, but he wouldn't have wanted that, and they decided to release him. And afterwards, they had a number of interesting experiences, and I believe it partly was that way because the family has grown up believing in dreams of those who have gone on being able to come back and be present to them, including the son and daughter and the wife herself. But I had her write down some of her experiences for me, and she wanted to tell me what had happened during the 24 hours or so after Frank had died in the early morning hours of February 3rd. She said, our daughter and her husband were making their way to our house about 11 miles away to make funeral plans. She was on her cell phone talking to her staff at work about her absence, work deadlines, and so on. And all the way home near Reston, she had a clear signal. But as their car came to the exact place where her husband Frank had suffered cardiac arrest, just a minute or two from their own home, the daughter lost the signal and her phone died. And as she came in the door, her Marge, the wife's son Tom, was going out to put something in the mailbox, and he heard a huge clatter from crows roosting in some large trees. And as he looked up, he saw a beautiful red-tailed hawk swooping into the cul-de-sac, screeching. And he circled the street twice, passing over Tom's head in his parked truck. As he flew by, Tom looked up and said in his mind, speak to me if you can. And the hawk gave out a beautiful long sound and flew off. And the red-tailed hawk is a symbol, with, particularly within Native Americans, of a messenger kind of thing. And for herself, as she was preparing to go upstairs to bed the day that her husband had died, she had turned all the lights off downstairs and even turned back and went halfway down in the kitchen to be sure she hadn't left the light on, and everything was pitch black. But when she came down in the morning, the light was on, and she was a lamp hanging over the kitchen. And it occurred to her that it was Frank who caused it, and it became very peaceful because she believed in all the things the family witnessed were his trying to get through to her with a message. Now, the daughter has had dreams that are probably of the of variety, in which she has seen her father in a crowd and couldn't reach him. And another time she and her brother do sit out giving her father champagne, and everything was fine, but she said to him in the dream, she realized he had died. She said, Dad, what are you doing here? You're dead. And his eyes got a bit red and teary. He leaned over from the chair he was sitting in next to her and gave her a side hug, and I began to cry. He said, what do we do now? And I woke up crying. So there's a kind of things that happen with synchronicities. So electric lights turn on and off, little vacuum cleaners, you name it. But also things like there can be animal visits that are strange or unusual or unique, or there can be just this sense of presence that is very important in terms of grief and bereavement. And this happened very shortly after his death, but I think it happened because these people were open to it and aware and noticing.
Yeah, and of course, if they were closed-minded to it, they would never notice any of those things. You know, and Also, in talking with a lot of people, there are certain symbols, as you mentioned, that come up a lot, and they're associated with things that are spiritual. People talk about seeing, you know, birds. Or I was talking with somebody the other day, and she was convinced that a very rare butterfly that kept, you know, following her, that the butterfly was actually, you know, her mother, or her mother reincarnated as a butterfly. But, you know, I also suggested the possibility that maybe her mother was able to send these butterflies her way. I mean, so there's more than one possible scenario. It doesn't necessarily mean that that is their loved one, but there's no reason to think that our loved ones, on wherever they are, can't manipulate energy the same way that they could when they were here.
Yes, and that's a very good point, that there are dream messengers, and the dream messenger need not necessarily be the person, him or herself, but rather has the ability to send messages via fax machines or butterflies or whatever it takes to get the person's attention. Mm. I think the idea of your signs of life registry is a wonderful idea, because in this case, you know, people look for pennies, let's say. I used to look for coins after my father died. I was supposed to have a black dress for his funeral, and I couldn't find one that I liked. And I went into J.C. Penney's store in a small town and found a quarter on the floor or something. And I said, okay, Dad, it's now or never. And, you know, I found a black dress, and I did it. But
yeah.
From then on, every now and then, I'll find coins on the floor, and I always think it's my dad.
Yeah.
It's sort of a penny pincher in ways, in a nice way. But, you know, it's a sweet thing.
Yeah. You know, from reading much now about dreams, which I was stimulated to do by, you know, after meeting you, frankly, but there were ancient societies that were actually built around dreams.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I thought that was extraordinary, where the, you know, the elders would meet with the members of the community, and they would daily, and they would all share the dreams that they had during the evening before, and then they made decisions about how to base their, you know, what they were going to do that day on the consensus of the dreams. You think there's something that we can learn from that? Maybe we should be adopting those practices.
Well, see, there's a communal aspect to this, and it means that it works best, I think, in a community with like minds and like purposes. And so everybody's working for the common good. We've become such egotistical separatists, including trying to do everything ourselves and putting ourselves first and thinking of ourselves and our own little family, that we've lost that idea of community living, and people in other cultures survived because of it. And this is what I think is a message to us here and now. The Sonoy kind of studies that were done by Kilton Stewart a long time ago have not been replicated very easily, because it was sort of an ideal society, and things have changed there too in the islands that they took part in. But I have people who are of Native American traditions who still strongly believe in dreams and have very, very effective connections with those who have passed on and with each other. Mm. You know, medicine women who get together on the first full moon or things of that sort, and they have a healing circle, and they're working for the common good.
And, you know, I mentioned, you know, I know we're reaching the end of our time, but many would be surprised to learn that there are professional organizations, you know, that study dreams very seriously. And I mentioned you're the founding member of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and I gave the website iasdreams.org.
It's actually asdreams.org. It's asdreams.org.
Okay, I got that wrong.
No, it's okay.
But
people do, because we are IASD in other places, so
I see.
It's a common mistake.
In the time we have left, can you tell us a little bit about the organization and what people can learn from going to the site?
Yes, it's a wonderful organization. It's international, It's open to people anywhere with whatever their interest in dreams. Many are professionals and healing professions like psychology, psychiatry, social work, religious studies. There are artists, there are writers, there are computer experts, there are people who are like me, a personal appreciator of dreams. And we all draw together with that kind of communal thing we were talking about before of loving the subject, wanting to know more about it, and sharing what we know with each other. We have conferences every year. We have a professional journal, which is juried. We have a magazine that comes out quarterly or three times a year. We have monthly e-news, lots of things open to people. If you go to the website and just look and see what's there, there are many, many resources. And I strongly urge people just to go to the website. We will have a conference coming up in the Netherlands in late June, and it's called Something in Diversity, Culture and Diversity, I believe is the name of it. I should know. I'm blanking on it at the moment.
My dream.
But it's really good, and I think I've been with it for all of these 27 years now, and I love it. I have family. I consider them my dream family as well, and we are. We're just all in it together, doing what we can, as you do with yours as a nonprofit, and everybody's a volunteer for one paid staff person. So.
Okay, and that is asdreams.org.
Yeah, www.asdreams.org.
Yeah, well, we don't even mention the www anymore.
You don't need to.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, one thing, yeah. I found something that's kind of cute, if you can't find it, a book called Do Dead People Walk Their Dogs?
Oh, yeah?
And it's questions you'd ask a medium if you had the chance. And it's Concetta Bertoldi.
Uh-huh.
It's not a new book, but it's very interesting. It's questions people do ask if they have questions about this sort of thing.
Right.
And she's really pretty much on with what she says.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. And thanks for being with us. And glad we'll be seeing you again real soon. And
I'm happy to be with you.
Always a pleasure. And thanks for joining us, and have a wonderful evening.
And I appreciate what you two have done and are doing, and all of your staff and all of your volunteers, because it's really needed in this world today. So bless you both, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much,
Peter.
Good night.
Good night.